Good morning out there in podcast land. I am recording from a Friday. I had intended to record on Tuesday, but life happens, right? So today I'm going to be talking about, I have a list here. Jesus babies. You'll have to wait for that one. That is the title of the podcast. But I wanted to share this about this show that my daughter and I saw Monday night called Trans Am. And it was a one-woman rock and roll show. She's a playwright. Her name's Lisa Friday. And she is a trans woman. And I just wanted to recommend it to anyone who has the opportunity to see it. We saw it downtown Dayton at the Schuster. Oh, I'm sorry, not the Schuster. The Loft. It wasn't a huge crowd, but I really enjoyed the people that were there. You could tell they were from the LGBTQ community, a lot of supporters. And during the Q&A session, a lot of really great questions and a lot of support for Lisa. So I guess she's working with some people and crossing fingers. It turns into a Broadway show eventually. There is a Facebook page, so just check her out. The show is called Trans Am, and it's Lisa Friday. I guess she was a famous rock star at one point in New York City in the LGBTQ community, so I didn't know that going in. I like to be surprised when I go to a show. I don't like to read a whole bunch about it beforehand. And then after I see something, I'll generally dig in really deep, kind of like, you know, after you see a Netflix series, you kind of go down the rabbit hole looking up actors, looking up that person who was familiar, and then I kind of deep dive. But before a show, I like to be surprised. So check that out. What else is going on? Let's see. I did read in our newspaper that the World Affair is coming. It comes once a year, but because of the pandemic, it hasn't been in town since 2019. And they're changing the location for anyone who's listening that's local. It's going to be in Greene County. It's always traditionally been downtown Dayton, but they're moving it. So I look forward to that. That's happening in May. And I love the World Affair. And I actually wrote a blog about it because I remember going as a child. And, you know, for a kid who didn't have any background information, I just thought it was so cool that you could go from country to country and see dancers and try food and experience that culture all in one big building. And I just thought, wow, it must be so cool to know where you come from and know that you're part of a particular ethnic background and one you can identify with. Maybe your grandma taught you how to make the food. All of that was just like, I was in awe of that as a child. And then later as an adult, when I'd go, that was the location of a very important conversation I had with my adoptive mom. And I don't know, I guess being at the World Affair triggered some adoption questions for me. And so as a young adult, I asked her, you know, I talked to her about trying to find my birth mom. And I remember what her response was, like it was yesterday. She said, "You could ruin her life if you reach out to her. She might not have told her husband about you." And honestly, that had never occurred to me. But as the defensive smart aleck teen that I was, I said, "Well, I guess that's her fault for not telling the truth." And that shut down that conversation. I don't think my mom and I talked about that again until I was in my 30s. So you can see the resistance that even my own mom had, who I thought was pretty open-minded in general. You know, she told me I was adopted. She talked about adoption positively, but not in a way that made me have unrealistic expectations, such as, "You were chosen. You're special." She didn't say any of that to me. It was very matter-of-fact talking about adoption in my house. And it was just a fact. I was adopted. We move on with life. Every now and then it would come up, but the answer to any question I ever had was, "I just don't know. They didn't tell us anything." As one podcast host asked me in an interview, she said, Len, were they just incurious? And I said, apparently, because I didn't call up the cradle and ask any questions. I think it was purposeful in curiosity, because had one of my parents called up the cradle and started asking questions, then they would be on the cradle's radar for bad adoptive parent. At least I think that's probably how my mom viewed it. So now that I know my father's side, this will be the first time that I get to go to the World's Affair with that knowledge. So I'm very excited to attend. Unfortunately, in the past, they don't have any Peruvian representation there. They do have Colombian. And I remember at one time I thought I was Colombian based on some family lore. And so the year that I thought I was Colombian, I really got into it. I was eating all the food, just hanging on every word, looking at every book and talking to the people there. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm Colombian. But again, a couple years later, my DNA proved otherwise. Turned out I was Peruvian. So if you want to know more about that, you can listen to my memoir, season one of this podcast. I go ahead and read several chapters, well, the majority of chapters. There's some additional chapters that I plan to publish in the actual book one day, but give that a listen if you're interested in my story. Okay, so moving on to Jesus babies. Jesus babies is something, a term that I had never heard before, and last weekend I attended a spiritual nurture women's retreat, which I enjoyed very much. It was at a camp. It was called Kirkmont, and it was a couple counties away from me in Ohio, out near Bell Fountain, and it was just really fun. We were, you know, it was just like being at camp. I slept in a bunk bed, although that doesn't sound fun to some people, but actually the mattress was pretty comfortable. And we had times where we did group activities. We had a keynote speaker. We did all sorts of crafts. We went on hikes, bird watched, all sorts of really cool stuff. So I came back pretty nurtured from that. However, I did have one situation that disheartened me during a lunch conversation. And a woman who she's retired now, but a former ER nurse, was discussing the Jesus babies. And of course, my ears perked up. I'm like, Jesus babies, what could this mean? And so she explained that when she worked in the ER, sometimes pregnant teenagers would come in with a bellyache, but they would say, my stomach hurts. I have no idea what's wrong. And so the nurse would say, okay, well, let's get an ultrasound. We'll see what's going on in there. And then they would find that the teenager was pregnant. And because the teenager was a minor, the nurse would go discuss that with the mother or the parent, usually the mother, who was in the waiting room. And the mother would be shocked, of course, and say, that's impossible. My daughter didn't have sex. She's never had sex. And so the nurse, of course, would then go talk to the pregnant mother, who would also say, I've never had sex. And hence the term Jesus baby. These are babies that I don't know. She didn't explain, but I have to assume it's kind of a joke related to an immaculate conception. That's my take on it. So anyway, this turned into a conversation with the mom privately about, I know it's a shock. I know she's young. Support your daughter. And hey, there's always adoption. It worked out great for me. Okay, so that's when I learned the nurse, who was actually the retreat nurse and looked at my skin because I had some kind of weird allergic reaction. And we've had many conversations. I was like, oh, wow, she's an adoptive parent. Okay, that puts a new spin on everything. And she said, it worked out for me. It was a great experience. Well, most of the time, ha, ha, ha. And a couple of my friends looked at me from across the table with eyes of, I'm sorry that you're listening to this. I'm sorry that this is happening. I'm giving you support with my eyes across the table. And, you know, I was triggered, I'll admit, but not as triggered as I would have been maybe 5 years ago, even 3 years ago. Now I just see it as she was speaking for the culture that believes adoption is an unquestioned good and always should be venerated and discussed whenever somebody's pregnant and didn't know it or is pregnant and young. But I would like to discuss that some alternatives to this way of thinking. I mentioned it in my last podcast, but Andi Stanley and I are having discussions like this over at her podcast, The Adoption Files, comparing adoption to cults, which is a little outrageous, I know, but the BITE model that we reviewed, which is Dr. Stephen Hawson's freedomofmind.com, if you want to go check it out, I'll put it in the show notes. There are a lot of very similar things that happen in cults and in the adoption industry. So anyway, that's a plug for those conversations. If you want to check those out, feel free. So let's talk about alternatives to adoption and why it shouldn't be the first thing that we bring to a mother with an unexpected pregnancy. First off, family preservation is considered the least restrictive and best case scenario. And if you do any research that's outside of the adoption community, you'll see that concerning similarities between the behaviors, information, thoughts, and emotions, which is where the BITE model comes from, that are seen in cults as compared to the adoption industry. So I encourage you to look at the BITE model and think about it as a way to frame how culture views adoption and how culture continues to uphold this idea that it is superior than just plain old biological parenting. And at the same time, not only is it superior, it also comes with a stigma. So it's not as good as biological parenting. So it's very tricky. It's tricky for adoptive families to try to parent in this society that tells them, oh, you're like, you did such a great thing by adopting. So wonderful. But at the same time, they're going home to a child who, frankly, has trauma. And the culture is not validating that trauma. The culture is just so excited about adoption. You know, we glamorize it. We show just the moment when the family gets the baby. You never see what happens when they're 5, 10, 15, and they're having behavioral problems or their identity disturbance or their suicidal, all the things that we know can happen to adoptees at a higher rate than the general population. Those are the things you're not going to see. You're only going to see the beauty of parents getting a baby, or in the case of adoptees as adults, you'll see the beauty of our initial reunion, but you won't see the aftermath. So those are some thoughts that went through my head when I heard the Jesus baby story. And then I also wanted to just give you some food for thought. Instead of thinking about adoption as your first go-to when somebody is pregnant, somebody young, or somebody who didn't know they were pregnant because they didn't have the proper sex ed or they felt shame for admitting that they knew they were pregnant, I think the most loving thing we can do for anyone in that situation is to support them within the family that they're already in. And by extension of supporting the mother, we're supporting the baby. Support the mother and the baby to think bigger than, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to go to college. Oh my God, if I don't keep this baby, if I have this baby, I'm never going to have a good life. How about we look at it like, how can we put support in place for the mother and the baby so the mother still can get her education, so the baby can stay with the natural family and still have a great life? That is what we need to be focusing on and not thinking, oh, adoption, as the first go-to response. adoption should be the last thought on the list. The first thought should be family preservation, support within the family. How can we get health insurance? How can we get, you know, and there is health insurance available for people, for teenagers that are pregnant. Pretty sure they can get signed up on Medicaid right away as soon as they make contact when they're a minor. So that's one care that can be taken. That's one need that can be addressed right away. And on top of that, you know, let's not shame somebody for doing something that comes naturally, which is having sex. Okay, let's just support the mother and let's keep her in a calm state while she's having a baby, while she's growing the baby. All right, those are the types of things I want to educate about. We want to do everything we can to support mother and baby to stay within the family. Okay, and if that is absolutely not possible for whatever reason, then the next step is we find a family member who can support the mother and baby. Or if the mother is adamantly opposed to parenting, we support the baby within the actual family that she belongs in, which is the biological family. Okay, I know these words are coming to some of you as a, oh my gosh, Lynn is brainwashed and doesn't know what she's talking about. But I do know what I'm talking about. I'm a kinship adoptive parent. You know, my daughter is 18 now, and she has done very, very well in our home. She is an amazing person, and she has a relationship with her other side of the family, where her maternal side. She also has a relationship with her paternal side, and I want to advocate for keeping children in their families, okay? As someone who was raised by really decent human beings, they weren't related to me, but there's no emotional attachment there. I love my adoptive family, but there is an emotional, psychological, biological attachment that people have to their biological families that people don't talk about. They wanna put out the myth that adoptive parenting and being adopted is exactly the same as biological parenting or being a biological child. It is not. It is not the same, everyone, okay? Just know that that is the big myth that culture is trying to sell you, that it is the same. It is not the same, okay? Now, beyond that, I'll talk to you another day about the differences, but that's not part of today's podcast. So, and that doesn't mean you can't be successful if you're adoptive parents. I want to encourage you to not be afraid of the differences, to actually go there. It's scary, but go there. Learn about the differences. Learn how your adoptive child feels differently than if they were your biological child. Understand that they're going to have different issues, questions, problems than a biological child. And at the same time, they're going to have the same issues and problems as every child. So it's both and, okay? It's not either or. And that's one of the cult bite model thinking is black and white. We can't be black and white in adoption. Everything is in the gray, okay? Just remember that. So that is my podcast for today. There is always a way to keep a child in the family, in my opinion, but you just have to decide how much you're willing to sacrifice to make that happen. And folks, it is a sacrifice. You will be up in the middle of the night with a baby. You will not be able to go away some weekends. It truly is a sacrifice, but it's one that's worth it. So thanks for listening today. I will chat with you all next week. And if you have any questions, you can reach out to me at theadoptedgenealogist@gmail.com.